I want to acknowledge our study team first. This is a very complex project and involves a large team with three universities and the Battelle Centers for Public Health Evaluation and Research. And then at our peak, we had a team of about 40 individuals. And I want to acknowledge one of our data collectors is in the audience. You want to raise your hand? And I neglected to put on the slide that this was funded by a contract from NICHD. And no relationship, no conflicts to disclose. Broken windows as a measure, as part of a measure or a measure of the condition of communities has been around for a long time. This isn't a new idea. And most often you see it used as part of a complex scale of the neighborhood characteristics. And it has, as an individual item, it's fallen out of favor somewhat in sociological research and social science research with the idea that it's only one element in a very complex model of what influences conditions. In public health and in public health nursing, in assessing of communities and populations, we like to have indicators that are powerful ways of describing very simply the health of a population. For example, we use infant mortality as the single most sensitive indicator of a population's health because it's responsive to housing, education, race, and income. So the fundamental question here is this in fact a sensitive indicator of a community's health? It's a quote from an article on policing. If a broken window is unrepaired, all of the windows will soon be broken. Broken windows are a signal that no one cares. And this is believed to be because seeing broken windows is an appearance of abandonment. And they argue in this Wilson and Kelling article that that appearance influences behavior, and when you see a building or even an abandoned car with a single broken window, very soon other broken windows follow, and that this occurs even in high-income areas where you see signs that someone doesn't care. So just a comment again about indicators that that it would be useful to have a simple indicator for community health. So the literature can be divided into two groups. There's literature that looked at individual level measures, where you look at the characteristics of an individual household and against the characteristics of the individuals in the household. And then the second group are studies which use aggregate measures. A measure describing the neighborhood and then look at associations with health. So in the first category, we see evidence that there are associations with physical health and also with mental health. Physical health have included measures of accidents, asthma, TB, and all-cause mortality. And then within mental health, the findings have been independent of the community condition and of seeing both increasing symptoms with increasing repair over time, disrepair, and associated with lower levels of mastery. And then as a neighborhood measure, also see associations with all-cause mortality, cardiovascular disease, homicide, and child asthma. And then in an article in 2000 in the American Journal of Public Health, associations with gonorrhea rates. And they assessed 55 census blocks using housing and street conditions, including broken windows, in New Orleans, and showed an association with gonorrhea rates per block group that was stronger than an index of poverty, that is, including income, low employment, and low education. So the study that I'm, or it's little sub-study I'm going to talk about today is done in St. Louis City. And St. Louis City is one of 30 counties, locations, testing three different recruitment modes for the National Children's Study. Just a little bit of quick background. The National Children's Study is an environmental study of children in planning right now. The main study is in planning. And the sample targeted is 100,000 children recruited either preconception or in pregnancy, followed to age 21. And the design is a prospective cohort with a geographic probability sample that is stratified by rural-urban status. And I was interested in the paper on classification because this is a very crude stratification. It's really rural, not rural, and it's based on population density. And there were 105 counties randomly selected that were originally targeted for the main study. And St. Louis City was one of the urban counties. Now, St. Louis City is in a very small group of cities in that the inner city is a county and is a city. And Baltimore and D.C. are the only other cities where the inner city, the city is completely inner city and doesn't include suburbs. So St. Louis City is a county, and St. Louis County is a county, and the county has all of the suburbs, which are in many cases quite wealthy, and the city is just the inner city portion. And we'll come back to that because that's important. So we're one of 30 counties in the Vanguard study, and actually there are three phases to the Vanguard study, and we're in the second phase, where 30 locations were selected to test three different methods of recruitment. And the method of recruitment that we were testing was door-to-door recruitment in the randomly selected segments. The sampling was that the counties were randomly selected, and then each county was divided into strata, 15 strata based on births, roughly the same number of births per year. And then each strata was divided up into 15 segments, and then one randomly selected segment was selected from each strata. So we ended up with 15 little areas around the city in which to recruit. So our questions were, does the percent of households with broken windows predict the difficulty of identifying and recruiting pregnant women door-to-door? And does this measure reflect sociodemographic characteristics, and does it predict birth outcomes in the neighborhoods? So we're evaluating our success in recruiting and looking to see if the percent of broken windows is affecting our success. So the first step in this pilot of looking at recruiting door-to-door was to list all of the households in those 15 segments. So we started with an address file that covered 127 census blocks. And in the process, we identified 13,000 and we verified 13,478 dwelling units within those 15 segments. And we had the listers, as they were going out validating addresses, identify whether or not there were any broken windows. And this was done from what they could see from the street. So it could be on the front, could be on the side, but they weren't to walk around the house and go down the alleys to figure out. And it was just a simple yes-no measure. And this process took about 24 days, and in November and December of 2010. And at that time, we had 6 field staff and 2 supervisors. So the measure is proportion of broken windows. So the count of households with any broken windows per segment was the numerator, and the denominator was the total households in that segment, the total dwelling units. And then that calculated as a percent. And we looked at the frequency distribution and scatter plots and created from those figures a dichotomous variable of either less than 5% houses with broken windows or more than or equal to 5% broken windows. And I should mention that the National Children's Study, because of concern about confidentiality, has extremely strict rounding rules for anything. We're not allowed to show you the segments. We can't tell you how many women we recruited per segment. You're going to have to trust me that my percents are based on accurate figures. So for the variable proportion of pregnant women recruited, we went to Missouri vital statistics and birth certificate data that were geocoded, and the most recent we could get was 2010. And from that, we determined the expected births per year in each segment. And this became our denominator for our variable of success at recruiting. So then we calculated the number of consented women per segment divided by the number of expected births per segment and expressed that as a percent. And we also used as outcomes birth weight in grams, gestational age using the clinical estimate of gestational age. This is from the birth certificates. And then preterm birth, less than 37 completed weeks, and low birth weight, less than 2,500 grams. So for recruitment success, we had 15 neighborhoods, but one neighborhood that the program office stopped the whole Vanguard study before we had been able to get into one segment that had a high proportion of locked buildings, because we were working on some complicated methods of getting around that. When we compare the means, though, for the two groups, those that had less than 5% and those that had more than or equal to 5% broken windows, we see almost 28% recruitment of the pregnant women projected in the segments for those that had low broken windows, and 20% of those with higher broken windows. And this proved to be not significant. We also looked at using broken windows as a continuous variable and comparing it to recruitment success and using a Spearman's row, and that also was non-significant. Then we turned to looking at demographic characteristics against broken windows. And to do this, we used the birth certificates, but for 2007 through 2010 combined, because the segments were so small that we needed a larger N. And here we found significant relationships with bivariate analysis, looking at age, education, race, and Hispanic ethnicity, such that, as you would expect, higher broken windows, younger population, more under the age of 18, and fewer over the age of 35. And education, more with less than high school or GED, and fewer with more than high school. And in the comparison of race, a rather striking difference, with 52% of African Americans 52% of people with broken windows over 5% were African Americans, compared to only 9.8% for white. And we'll come back to that. That's important. And then the ethnicity, slightly lower likelihood of being Hispanic and having higher broken windows. Birth outcomes, looked at the two continuous variables and found a significant effect for birth weight, such that babies born in the segments that have higher proportion of broken windows had were about 140 grams lighter than the babies in the low broken windows. Gestational age was not significant, and that shows a mean of 38 compared to a mean of 48, and I think that's a typo. I think it was 38.3 and 38.08 and not significant. And then for the dichotomous variables, we did not find an association with low birth weight, but we did with preterm birth, with 17% preterm in the segments with high broken windows and 12.6 in those with low. So we also looked at multivariate analyses and with the continuous variables using multiple regression, and you see that with just broken windows, we get the same result as we saw with the other analyses, 140 grams lighter if in the high broken windows segments. But when we add race to the model, that goes to not significant, and so we stop there. With gestational age, the main effect was not significant. And then we used logistic regression for looking at the dichotomous variables. And for preterm birth, see a 1.4 times higher risk for the unadjusted odds ratio due to broken windows, high broken windows. And then when race is added to the model, the adjusted odds ratio for broken windows becomes non-significant. So race is explaining the effect. And then for low birth weight, which remember earlier we had found no association, but for using this method, logistic regression, we do see a barely significant effect for the unadjusted. And then when we adjust for race, again, it drops to not significant. So to summarize the results, we didn't see an association with door-to-door recruiting success. There was a trend, but not significant. And then in the univariate analyses, the high broken windows segments, more likely to be African American, less likely to be Hispanic, lower education, higher under 18 births, and then lower average birth weight and higher rate of preterm birth, but not low birth weight. In the multivariate analyses, race appeared to account for all of the association. The limitations of our study include that there are only 14 small neighborhoods, each averaging 25 to 30 births per year, so we have limited power. We have not yet adjusted for parity or income. Couldn't look at interactions because of power. But the important thing, I think, for explaining why we did not find an effect is that St. Louis City has some characteristics that there's still a considerable amount of segregation, which limits our ability to separate neighborhood effects and race effects. That the north side of the city is has a lot of abandoned housing, is largely African American, and over the last couple decades, there's been sort of a downward pressure of people moving from the north side to the south side seeking better housing. But the north, so that, and it, that tends to be people with slightly higher means. And so the population on the north side is still almost completely African American. You remember looking at the broken windows, it was 50% were African American compared to less than 10% of Caucasian. Strengths of the study include that neighborhoods were randomly selected. There was a house-by-house assessment of broken windows, thank you, and we included 100% of the dwellings. We used a calculation of based on percent of total households, and we had, actually that should say 4 years of birth data for each neighborhood. So we can conclude that the proportion of broken windows is useful as a quick indicator of individual neighborhood level health, and our particular results, maybe the fact that race seems to account for all of the association, may be attributable to both greater depth of poverty on the north side, which is highly African-American, and our other results, though, are consistent with the literature that suggests physical neighborhood disorder, and that broken windows can spread disorder, and that this is can be independent of poverty. Thank you.
Okay. If the presenters would come up, we will open it up for questions. So we have 10 minutes for questions.
Stronger. So did you also mention that this was a part of a larger study? What's the purpose of the larger study?
It's a study of environmental exposures on child health and development. And environment was a broad definition, from social environment to with a heavy emphasis on biochemical environment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, actually, I have the same question about the first question. The 5-point couple point, I'm thinking. So which variable, you use the number of broken windows against which variable to show the scale plot?
Just the distribution, frequency distribution.
Okay, because I'm thinking the scale plot, you need to have two variables.
Right.
Then to show the relationship. So that's why my question is, the one side is the number of windows and the other side is which variable to show.
We did look at it both for birth weight and for gestational age. And it looked like there was a reasonable break in 5%.
Actually, I just wanted to comment also on yours that one of the things you said earlier in your slide was that you were looking for a quick indicator of community health for nurses. And teaching public health nursing, I have my students do windshield surveys, and that's valuable in that regard. So there's value to being able to know that there have been studies that have shown that science study, I'm actually going to look up the Kaiser study. Yeah.
It's independent, right.
Yeah. That it shows something's going on. You don't know what, but when you're in a very early windshield assessment phase of a community, it just says, I need to find out more. Mm-hmm. You know, so I appreciate that. I have a question. I forgot my question.
Did you have another question for one of the presenters, Stefan?
Oh,
no. Okay. So the audience, no more questions to the audience yet? Okay.
What was the Chromax alphas before you wrap those questions?
You get the next one.
0.70 is really at the questionable mark. It's not necessarily, it's okay, but it's not necessarily better. I was sort of wondering what it was before you dropped.
This is a very good question, because the Chromax alpha will be influenced by the number of items. Yeah, will be influenced by the number of items on the scale. So actually before it's like 0.75. For the birth scale. Because HIV perception knowledge, that scale. Because we dropped the 7 items from 12 to 5. So that's why. But 0.70, it's still, it's borderline, then it's borderline, it's acceptable, but because this is new scale. So that's why my explanation, because based on the literature, for the new scale and with the limited items, with few items, then 0.70 is still accessible.
I have one other question. I'm very interested in this because I'm conducting some AIDS-related surveys in Turkey and in upstate New York. From your experience, other than the statistical analysis, did you think that the reduction in the number of questions was actually helpful? Was it do anything for the subject?
Okay, this is a good question. I think this depends on the your study population. Because this study population is African-American male in rural area. Because based on our previous experience with this group, the first one is hard to recruit. So in our study, we use a different recruitment strategy. So that's why we were very successful. But the second reason is because these people, they don't read very well. They don't read very well. So that's the critical point. So that's why we use the audio testing. We load all the questions in the computer, touch screen computer, and they can listen. Because the computer will read the question, and they only need to touch. then, you know, mm-hmm. then we need to keep it very brief, because these people, you know, they don't want to. This is our second study. The first study it was 5 years ago, funded by the Alliance too, based on that study, because these populations, they don't want to spend too much time to answer in all the survey questions. So that's why for the second study, we tried to find a brief instrument then to do the brief intervention with this group.
Thank you. Okay, then Catherine.
I was curious, when I did my thesis research 20 years ago, it was in a rural area of obstetrical care, there was still a federal designation of frontier. I've not kept up with the definition, so I was wondering if you know when frontier disappeared from designations, or has it?
It has not disappeared. No. There is still a designation of frontier, and there's a brief explanation of it in the article that we published, but it's not necessarily county-based either. So
right.
we, for the purpose of this presentation, we did the most overarching codes, but Frontier is still with us today.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, we have time for one more question.
Can I ask Kathy? You know, I think this is a very great model, because I took a student, I think a community health nursing clinical before, and so that's why it really interests me. I'm thinking, so for I'm interested in what's the timeline for this assignment. It seems like students, they do a community assessment, and after that, they identify the major needs. Then after they identify the major needs, and they do some implementation. Right? So I'm thinking, what is it, one semester or two semesters?
It's even worse than that. It's an accelerated program, so it's a 7-week course, and they have 50 clinical hours to complete in that 7 weeks. And so it's RN to BSN completion, so they're already RNs, you know, so they already kind of have a basis. So we just throw them in the deep end really fast. They have to determine an aggregate population that they can access that meets regularly in the community. So that was like the Tai Chi group that met regularly through the senior center. A lot of them, they might have children in elementary school, and so they'll choose their child's second grade class and teach hand washing or whatever. But they have to identify their aggregate group right away, and then do an assessment, needs assessment, usually with the administrative people or the authorities with that group, and then with the population of the group itself. And then, so it's like 1 week. They have 1 week to do each of these steps. It's very fast. But they actually accomplish it. I kind of have to push them somewhat. But
so this is a group project or individual
project? No, it's individual projects. So each student has to do their own teaching. And they have a week then, once they've determined the topic that the group has decided that they want to hear, that the student then, sometimes I give them 1 to 2 weeks. It a little bit is dependent on when the group meets again and will allow the student to come in. So I give them a 2-week leeway there. But they need to then assess publications, you know, materials that they can use to teach. And I teach them how to, you know, they have to do the assessment for literature and cultural and literary assessment as well, and applicability. And then they actually implement it. They actually do the teaching. And then after they've done the teaching, then they have a week to do their final part of the care plan, which is a report of how they did and what they felt about how they did. I've had students say I felt really incompetent, but they found it all very useful.